This is the interactive portion of the program. We're going to take your phone calls with Edward Carswell, questions, or if you're a prepper, share your stories with us as well. And welcome back to Coast, Edward Carswell with us. Ed, before we get to calls, if you have a medical emergency, can you still get an ambulance and everything else from where you are?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Well, that's good.
Yep. It would take a little bit of time for it to get here. That is still available, yes.
I mean, you've got hospitals in the area and things like that?
Yeah, actually down in the town, that small town that is not that far away, they have a hospital right there in that town.
Now, since you've been prepping, which has been how many years now?
Oh, goodness. If I look back at it, ever since my childhood, really, because my grandparents were Depression-era people, and I never really knew it was prepping because they always had a stocked pantry.
Yeah.
And so growing up as a young adult, I always had a stocked pantry. But the wake-up call for me personally, and I tell people this, was Hurricane Katrina. My children were very young at the time, and I realized after that situation happened that we needed to rely on ourselves and how important that was to be self-reliant. And if an emergency happens, not to be looking for somebody else to take care of us, that we needed to provide for ourselves. So that was really the catalyst for me that really got me into prepping.
You know, in those days, most homes in the basement had a little pantry where people, and I remember what my mom used to have, she still does, where, you know, she had all kinds of canned goods down there and everything else. And it never dawned on me that it was available in case of an emergency. I always thought it was just like a little storage room.
Well, I can remember being a kid, and my grandmother, she would say, oh, we used the last of that Hellman's. Eddie, go downstairs and get another jar of Hellman's.
Yeah, they were always ready. They had enough stock like a store.
Absolutely. It was like a little store. So you'd always grab the one in the front because that was the oldest. And, when Grandma went shopping and you helped her stock the shelves up down there, you put the newest stuff in the back. So it was just... But it was normal, it was natural. Canning was a normal thing. They had an acre-sized garden that they did every single year, so we did a lot of canning. So it was really, for me, that part of my childhood was absolutely awesome to be in that environment. And it was just a wonderful thing. And it really stuck with me. And then, as I got older and got into prepping, I really wanted to make sure that my children experienced those type of things like I did and had that type of, life experience. And, I think it's been a really good thing for them.
How do you purify water? I hate tap water. So what do you do?
Well, actually, I have a well. And so what I do is what I use, I filter everything. So I use a big Berkey. That's what I have right on my counter. And so any water that we're going to drink or cook with, we filter that water first in the Berkey, and then we utilize that water. And it's a fantastic thing to have for your home. It gets rid of so many impurities. And even if you're using tap water, I would recommend that people have a big Berkey because of all the chlorine and everything else that they're putting into the water nowadays. It helps get all that nastiness out of there.
That's right.
It's much better tasting water.
I used to have a well on a farm I owned back in Illinois years ago, and they would always recommend, and people are going to think this is weird, but in the well, pour a cup of bleach down there maybe like once a week, once a month. Did you ever do that?
Actually, I did that when I first got to my property. I took, I think it was almost 2 gallons of bleach.
Oh, really? Yeah, I would just do a cup and just dump it down there.
That was like I wanted to shock the system because I didn't know if there was anything that I didn't want, if an animal had crawled in there or something to that effect, and I really wanted to shock that system. But since then, I haven't. I have a storage tank now that I pump the water. Well, actually, I have an artesian well, so the water is always coming up. So I'm really blessed in that aspect. And so what happens is it really kind of does it on its own a lot of times with a gravity feed. I'll turn my pump on for literally a minute, and then I turn it off, and then like 5 minutes later, I'll go back, and the tank's filling on its own. So it just needs that boost to get started. And I have a 1,000-gallon storage tank underground that I have, right there available. So then I also have a rain catchment system attached to the house, and I have another 550-gallon tank there But I generally use that water for gardening.
Did you ever get the water tested at a lab just to make sure it's okay?
Yes, I did. Yep.
Okay, that's smart.
Before I ever gave that water to my children to drink, I had that water tested.
Excellent. Okay, let's take some calls. Let's go to Jim in Mississippi, first-time caller. Hey, Jim, go ahead, sir.
Hey, how's it going? I'm a doomsday prepper. I recently started doomsday prepping about 6 months ago.
What are some of the things you did?
Well, first off, I started, building my shelters. I used some Kevlar mainly, actually. But the main thing that inspired me was that over time, there's like a corporate poisoning in my town, and I feel like,
yeah,
I honestly feel as though if you aren't doomsday prepping at this point, they're going to get you. Like, that it's going to come to bite you in the ass. Because, this one time, I saw this guy with like four arms. It's like, you don't see that shit like anywhere else out.
Kyle, you gotta be able to watch what you do. Don't worry, Ed. As we roll along, some people prep and some people don't. Let's go to Walter in Pennsylvania. Walt, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Walter.
Hi, George. It's always great to talk to you once again. I hope you and yours are well. I'm glad you got back to St. Louis.
I did. The plane only had 20 people on.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Yep. It's, George, sadly, I think the glory days of flying are long gone. My dad and I, we used to fly up to Alaska to go fishing. And back then, we used to go up on Northwest Orient, and they let you take your guns or whatever. The guys used to go on, with guns on their hips and sit in the plane. And, this was back in the 60s.
In those days, yeah. They're all gone. Those days, we'll never see that again.
Yeah. It's sad, George. But that's the way it is. That's the nature of what it is today. So, George, I just want to say I lead a very similar lifestyle to your guest. I have like a little farmette here, and I could probably last until at least the 4th of July without having going out to the food stores and whatnot. I have a potato salad here where I still living off my rutabagas that I grew from last year. I grow these big rutabagas. I grow them like the size of a bowling ball, and they last for months and months and months in cold storage. So, as I say, I hardly approve of his lifestyle. I'd also like to reiterate the importance of our Second Amendment.
Absolutely.
And that this whole thing is showing us, that society is a thin veneer, civilization is a thin veneer.
Well, Ed, do you think this is going to bring us back closer when it's all said and done?
Well, it really is going to depend on how bad things get, how bad the breakdown of society gets. And just like he just said, it's a very thin veneer between a civilized society and chaos. And, there's that old saying where, 72 hours away from anarchy, people don't have what they want. And so, those things are very, very realistic. And to be able to hedge your bets, prepping to me is another form of insurance. I mean, I'll ask people this. I'll say, why do you have car insurance? And I'll say, well, just in case. Number one, you have to have it, but
sure,
you have it just in case you have an accident. Right, exactly. So, again, prepping is the same thing. You prep just in case. A lot of prepping has a bad connotation because of shows like Doomsday Preppers, where they, in my opinion, purposely made people look out to be crazy and whatever and those type of things. But most people that prep are just your average everyday citizens that realize that we need to be able to rely on ourselves and not rely on the government and, be able to protect ourselves and protect the people that we care about. And that's why we do what we do. Because you never know. And when something comes up and something happens, you're ready for it.
Well, you sure are, and that's the important thing about all of this. That's what prepping's all about. We've got a client called My Patriot Supply. They have storable food. Their food lasts up to 25 years in cans. It's incredible, Ed.
Well, actually, I am a reseller for Legacy Freeze-Dried Food. Same thing. Same exact thing. You know, I always tell people this. I said, you know, I like I said, I do Legacy Freeze-Dried Foods. I said, I don't care what company you go with. If you go with My Patriot Supply, Mountain House, you know, whatever one is your flavor. I said, it doesn't matter to me. Augustine Farms, I said, get as long as you are doing it, that's what I care about. What my biggest concern for people, and I always tell them this, I want people to help themselves. And that's why I show people what I do and what's going on here at the homestead. And it's, you know, it's to show people, listen, I'm an average guy. I decided to change my lifestyle and to live a more simple life and a more free life. And I show people that anybody can do this with kids, without kids, regardless of your age. It does not matter.
So true. Mark in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my phone call, George. A shout out there to Tom from La Jolla. It's more important now that the Coast listeners, all of us, be a big family. It's more important. This show has never been more important than now, and I appreciate that. And I wanted to say I've been a prepper for a couple of years.
Good.
And I would say to all the listeners that might be a little bit trepidatious about it, one of the things they should do is enjoy it. You know, as they're prepping, they should think to themselves, well, what I'm doing is I'm getting ready for something that's like happening right now. And my question was going to be this. I have a retired doctor in my family, and through the years, my family retired doctor has accumulated medical equipment, which I put in my prep kit, like blood pressure cuff with the hose and the bulb assembly, stethoscope, and things like that. So I was going to ask the guest, what type of medical equipment would you recommend?
Interesting question there, Eddie.
That's a great question, actually. What I would recommend people, first of all, have a decent thermometer. And if you can get the old-style thermometers, which you cannot get generally anywhere anymore, but if you can find an old-style thermometer, the mercury thermometers, definitely get one of those. Get regular thermometers as well, but the old-style will last forever and ever and ever, so they're a great one to have. Blood pressure cuff is a great thing to have. A stethoscope is also good to have. If they can get a nebulizer machine to do help with breathing treatments, I think that's a good thing as well to help open up people's airways. Medical supplies are very, very important. Have some kind of suture kit. Be able to, have those things available in case you have to sew somebody up. Make sure you have tweezers in case you have to. Unfortunately, if somebody gets shot, you need to get that bullet out of there. So, just do the best you can. And if you can get somebody in your group with medical experience or even like a veterinary type of person, a veterinary tech, they have medical experience. It just happens to be with animals. But that would be somebody that would be very, very valuable to have in a group in a post-event. He made a great point, too, and I wanted to reiterate on this really quickly. What I tell my people a lot on my channel, it's very, very important to network. Network with people in your area of the country if you can. Even a loose affiliation, get to know people. Get to know them now. Because I think it's important in a post-event, you're not going to be very trustworthy of other people. So if you've made some kind of connections with people ahead of time and you have a relationship with that person, you know how you can trust them or not trust them. And I think that's really important to do.
Absolutely. But it's so important to be able to be prepared. And you know what? You may never use your kits, your prepping kits, but so what, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you what, you're right, you may never use anything, but I know that when I go to sleep at night, if I wake up to complete chaos the next day, I'm pretty much ready, not for every scenario, but you're a lot more ready than the average bear.
What's the longest you could last, Ed?
Oh, it would really depend on how many people were here. If it was me and my two children, I could probably be up here for years without leaving the homestead.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's probably all you'd need for things to get back to normal. You know, with this situation here, this bizarre coronavirus, when they first said it's going to be a couple weeks, and then all of a sudden it was a month. Now some people are talking it could go into June or July. I mean, what are people who don't have jobs, who don't have income, who don't have savings, when unemployment runs out in 8 to 10 weeks, what are they going to do?
Well, I'll tell you what I've encouraged people to do, especially right now in the South, they can start putting their gardens in now. Up here in the North, we can't do it yet, but we can start seeds and stuff like that. I encourage people this year, if you've never done it before, any kind of space that you can do gardening, put the biggest gardens in that you've ever put in before, plan on canning, try to get as much food up as you possibly can to prepare for whatever's coming. But like you said, once you, people are, if this thing extends for an extended period of time, most people, in probably what, maybe 80% or better of the people in this country, are paycheck to paycheck.
Yes.
So when that money runs out, how do you survive? How do you look at your children and say, you know, I didn't think enough to prepare for you, and now you don't have any food and you're hungry? What is that person going to do? I tell my people all the time, the most dangerous person in an event, in a post-event, in a worst-case type of scenario, the most dangerous person is somebody who is scared and desperate. You put that combination together, that person will do whatever is necessary to take care of the people that they care about.
And how many people are like that?
You're looking at most of the population. Like I said, 95% of the people in the United States, 95% are not prepared for a 2-week disaster. That's frightening.
That is frightening. And we see what it does to people's psyches and everything else. I think suicide rates are going to be at a record high. I think we're going to beat this. If this is a natural disease, I think it's going to fade away, and fade away quicker than most people think. If it was made in a laboratory and they doctored it up, well, then I can't predict how long it could last. But I still think we're going to win in the long run, Ed.
I think we'll win in the long run just because, you know, an event like this will do two things. And this is what I've talked a little bit about this, too. An event like this will bring out the best in people, and it will bring out the worst in people. And so it's a real good judge of people's character and where they are as a human being, and what they care about humanity, and not just themselves. Like I said, I've always prepped, and people say, you know, you have so much stuff and you're prepped so crazy. And I said, listen, I don't just prep for me and my family. I prep for the unforeseen people that are going to need my help as well.
That's right.
And I think that's important, and a lot of people don't take that into consideration, that there's a lot of really good people out there that maybe had no idea about prepping, were unprepared. And here's the other thing I want people to think about, people that are listening to your channel. There's going to be a lot of children out there that are going to need guidance, that are going to need help if this thing goes worst case scenario. I'm going on that front.
Well, and it's the kids who are scared because they don't know about this or the unknown. We're going to be back with more calls, final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Next hour, we're talking about karma. What goes around comes around. Here's our final segment, though, with Edward Carswell as we talk about prepping. Ed, by the way, you're doing a great job talking about this. I'm really impressed with you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, I've been doing this for a very long time, and I eat, live, and breathe prepping. So it's definitely my forte.
You do love it. I can tell. Now, did you go camping as a little kid, too?
I actually was on a farm as a very young child. We lived on a 72-acre farm. So we had, you know, pigs and cows and geese and ducks and chickens and, you know, and all that type of stuff. And, you know, was out hunting and hunting pheasants at a very young age and all that type of stuff. So it was really, you know, that love of nature was ingrained in me at a very, very early age and, you know, that peacefulness of it. And so, of course, you know, as I got older and I lived in the city of Rochester, you know, for a while and when I was in my 20s. And, you know, as you get older, it's funny, you want that peace again. So, you know, we moved into suburbia. We were there for about 8 years. And then I decided, you know what, I didn't want it anymore. And I wanted that peace again. And that was the big thing for me. And so, you know, but, you know, I would encourage anybody that wants to do this lifestyle, do your homework. Be prepared for bumps in the road because they happen. Everything is not going to go perfectly and smoothly. But if you're determined and you have that mindset that you're not going to give up, it is a wonderful way to live. And it's a much better way. And again, like I said, to be as free as I possibly can be, that was important to me, to lower my footprint, to like I said, having my own power system and it's all mine, and nobody can take that away from me. And they can't come and say, well, you didn't pay your bill, so we're turning your power off, So it's a great, great feeling, and it's peace of mind as well.
Did you ever watch The Twilight Zone when you were a kid?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, loved it.
There was a episode called The Shelter, and it was about a family that had a fallout shelter. This is during the 60s when everybody was afraid of the Soviets. And the neighborhood knew that this guy had a fallout shelter. They did not. Well, all of a sudden, there was a nationwide broadcast alarm that missiles were headed our way, and people just panicked. And they knew this guy had a fallout shelter. And so the episode was how humans deal with these kinds of crises. And they're knocking down his door. They're trying to break down his house. They want to get into the shelter. And they just go crazy, Ed. They just go ballistic. And then right at the end, and I'm going to have to give it away, all of a sudden there's a public address announcement. It starts with a big alarm, boop, boop. The whole neighborhood stops to listen. And it went, the missile attack was wrong. There are no missiles. Repeat, no missiles. And it ends with them by the guy's fallout shelter, smashing down his door with that poor guy and his wife looking at the neighborhood. It's a little bit like what's happening now, but I find that some people are pretty darn good about living with their other neighbors. Don't you find that?
I think so. I think it's important to incorporate your neighbors in what you're doing. I know that, where I'm at, I've talked with several of my neighbors. A neighbor behind me is also a prepper. And so, and then I've talked to other people. And up in this area where I'm at, I'm very, very fortunate. I think a lot of people will work together. And so, instead of coming and trying to, it's better to have that person be your ally than your enemy. So if you can talk to those people and make those connections, I think that that's important to do. And even if you're in the city, in suburbia, if there's certain neighbors that you know you can work with, and obviously there's going to be people you don't want to work with, but, if you can make those connections and plan on banding together, again, safety in numbers is very, very important. I always tell people, none of us can do this alone. When the time comes and in a true horrific emergency happens, we need to be working together, because not one person I know of can stay up 24 hours a day, do all the things that they have to do, guard everything and protect your family. You just can't do it by yourself.
No.
So, having people to work with is really important.
Back to the phones we go. Mary is in Freeze, Virginia. Welcome to the show. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Hi. I just want to say that I think Coast to Coast Insider is one of my best investments.
Well, great. Thank you.
But basically, I just want to call to say that my eyes were open because of guests that you have on, Steve Quayle, Wim Forsten, two things, and I started prepping in 2011. First, I went to the LDS Cannery, which I looked on their site last night, and there's absolutely nothing available. But I was working at a different hospital at the time, and I went to people around, and I was trying to relay to them the need to do this. And I remember one nurse saying, she had four small children, and she just said, I don't have room to put all that. And I remember thinking, what are you going to do in that day when your children are looking at you and they're hungry? What are you going to do? What are you going to say to them? But I just tried to prepare for me and mine. The one thing I do, I was raised similar to your guest, but the one thing I do have is those other people who might come, and having preparations for those people.
The guests. What do you think of that, Ed?
I think it's important to do that, and I think that's a good thing. You try to help as much as you can. I think that's important. But when you're working together, what you got to realize, too, you're going to have some people that are takers.
that want to sit around and do nothing. So you need to make it very, very clear to people, you know, like if somebody comes to my compound here where I'm at and said, you know, we need your help, and I'm going to go, that's fine. I have no problem helping you, but you will work to earn your meal. Nobody.
You need their help.
Right, exactly. So that's where the working together comes from. And if you don't work, then you don't eat. And the funny thing is what people don't understand, even the elderly folks have a lot of knowledge. And so they really can contribute with cooking, watching the younger children, sewing up clothes, manning a radio, you know, those type of things that are not physically taxing to them. Those are things that they can do, and they can be a true asset to any group. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. And I think that that really needs to be taken into consideration.
Everybody can contribute somehow.
Yes.
That's the important thing. Let's go to Austin in La Habra Heights, California. Hi, Austin. Go ahead.
Hi, George. So I had two comments, one about the virus and prepping and one about autism.
Okay.
So with the virus, I want to recommend a video. I'm sure lots of people have watched lots of things out there. The one that I found that stand out the most was called Lori Garrett, What Can We Learn from the 1918 Flu?
Okay.
And she was talking about this in 2009, and she pretty much predicted this is what's going to happen. And a lot of governments did think of this scenario. And she found two things that stood out to me. One was that governments, they did exercises, and they found, one, nobody knew what to do, and two, nobody really knew who was in charge. And if you're going to look at the 1918 flu, that pandemic, it actually lasted almost 2 years.
Yeah. Killed 50 million people, huh?
It more than that. She thinks around 90 to 100 million people, because a lot of it wasn't accounted for. So, you know, that was 6 months each of three waves. The second wave was the deadliest, and that came a year later. So, you know, I think really people need to really plan for that and look at something potentially up to 2 years. And, you know, where I live, it's easy to grow vegetables. But even if you can't, you know, start like a community garden, you know, you're going to have to rely more on the local level of, you know, working together with your community. And I would also recommend make sure you have enough seeds to last 3 or 4 seasons, because especially the, you know, mainstream seeds like from Monsanto, they modify them so that you can't grow seeds. Yeah,
exactly.
So you know, make sure you got tons and tons of seeds with you. And so that was about the virus. And about autism, I myself have actually, I was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome when I was 13.
Huh.
And a lot of people don't know how many people are autistic, and a lot that go undiagnosed. The problem that happened to me when I was younger, when I was seven, they diagnosed me with ADD, ADHD, oppositional defiant disorder, all these plethora of disorders. They gave me Ritalin, they gave me Adderall, they gave me Prozac. And then, you know, down the road, they reevaluate me at 13, and they're like, oh, he doesn't have any of those. He's actually autistic, so you can go ahead and take him off all the meds. So I had like 5 years of taking medications that I didn't need at all in the first place.
I'm glad you got off them when you did.
Yeah, I'm really glad. So it only compounded the issue. So, I mean, if there are people out there that might think, you know, your kid is autistic, you know, just make sure that they're properly evaluated and properly diagnosed, because you don't want anybody to be misdiagnosed and just taking things that they shouldn't be taking. And also just want to give, you know, our guest a huge props to, you know, for what he's doing. It really does take a lot of work taking care of an autistic kid.
Absolutely. Well, all right. Go ahead, Ed.
I appreciate that. Thank you. You know what? I never looked at it as a chore. That's my son. And so I will always take care of my son. And I don't, you know, I have no problem with that commitment. And, you know, it's like my son has taught me so much. I can't even begin to tell you. He made me a better parent, because I had to change my parenting strategies to cope with him, which I incorporated in with my other children, my daughter and my stepson. And, you know, it really made a big difference. And, you know, so he has taught me as much as I've taught him. And, you know, it's my son was diagnosed at 2.5. So we went through a period of very, very difficult period. And I don't know if people realize this or not. I want to just put this out there for people that are dealing with autism and stuff like that. The divorce rate for parents with autistic children is 95%.
That high? Wow. A lot of pressure then. A lot of pressure.
A lot of stress, a lot of pressure. Unfortunately, a lot of men will blame their wife because, you know, if there's something wrong with the child, it could not possibly be their fault.
Right.
But because I'm in the medical field, you know, I have always, you know, we sat down and we talked to doctors and everything like that. And I was like, is there something that we did? Did we do something wrong? And, you know, neither one of us were using drugs and any of those type of things. And, you know, with being twins, my daughter was perfectly fine, and my son ended up with the autism. So, you know, it was it's a hard thing to deal with. It really, truly is. But it's a blessing at the same time.
Did you keep looking at the daughter to see if she had any symptoms? I mean, did you get to that point where you were so concerned about her, too?
You know what? Never. She was, you know, I'm going to tell you what. Let me tell you what had happened. Both of my children were very normal, healthy little boys and girls. They were, you know, one of each, obviously, until 2 years old. And then at 2 years old, they got their shots.
Here we go.
Somebody flipped a light switch off my son. That's what it looked like. My son was actually talking before my daughter was talking. And when they got their shots at two, it was like somebody flipped a switch off. And I'm going to tell you what, I don't care what nonsense that they can feed you or what numbers they come up with. I know for a fact that those shots caused my son to have autism.
This was the combination shot, the MMR or something?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
That was it.
So, yep. And that was it. And, you know, in hindsight, if I could go back and do it all over again, I would have made them spread those shots out. As a parent, you can do that. So I would advocate to any parent. I don't advocate not protecting your children, but I do advocate that as a parent, you say to them, I want these spread out over a six-month period, a year period of time.
And they don't have to be together. They should be separate.
Absolutely, yes. And so be your child's advocate, because I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to tell you what, I am blessed. My son is very high functioning, you know, so in that aspect, I mean, he talks, he can, you know, function, he can wash himself and stuff like that. It took a while, but we got there, you know. And but I'm going to tell you what, the biggest thing that I would encourage all parents with children with autism, don't treat your child with autism any differently than you would treat your other child. Have rules, have boundaries. You know, have chores that they can do within whatever their boundaries are.
Yep.
And treat them just like you would treat anybody else.
Oh, sure. They know what they're doing.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's go to Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Hey, Corny, go ahead.
All right, George, Corny. I was just telling Tommy and Mr. Ed, I salute you and stuff. And I don't know if you're a military man, but George, he sure sounds like it and seems like he's a military man and stuff. But George knows I was a military police officer, just like your guest last night, Chris, that was a Marine. Now, George, I think this is an engineered economic collapse. And I don't know if you heard this about those two Navy carriers and stuff.
Oh, yeah, they're infected.
Yeah, but the captain is scared. But he said his men will fight down to the last. And there's something happening. We're near Fort Polk here in Alexandria, Louisiana. And up north in Shreveport, Louisiana, there's Barksdale Air Force Base. Well, there are people getting sick out there, but then they tell the news media, well, we can't tell you anything, you know, but we got people sick. So I think this is a false type of fear or flag event. It's affecting our military, and you know now it's affecting young folks now. So it's like it's mutated into killing all the old folks and stuff. Now it's moving to the young. So I believe in prepping, too. My dad's 90 years old. He was in the Depression and stuff, George and Ed, and he says it seems like it's going back to the Depression days, and he's got a Victory Garden and stuff. So get ready, fellas, and God bless you, George, and thank you so much for what you're doing for America and the world.
Well, you're very welcome, Cornelius. And as we wrap things up here, Ed, final thoughts, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Like I said, just plan on trying to help each other out. Work together if you can. Be supportive of each other. We're heading into some seriously bad times, and I really think it's important that we work together. That's the biggest thing. If anybody, you know, and be as ready as you can be. Get those gardens in. Prepare to help yourself.
The website, PrepperNurse1.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Ed, thank you for being on the program. We really appreciate it. Up next, we're going to talk a little bit about karma. What goes around comes around. I really believe that, and we'll be talking with a special guest about that, too.